Guys, Courtney, that new one, that really blessed me. Thank you. That's a good song. And blessed be your name. I remember introducing that song back when it first came out, and we were sort of just after 9/11, and everybody's a little bit like, oh man, all of our ideas for how life was going to go have just sort of been shattered. You know, in a lot of different directions, and a lot of people are asking those questions, and that song came out, and had those lines, that you give and take away, but my heart will choose to say, blessed be your name. And I hadn't heard that concept in a song before, and I remember introducing that song around that time, and then we just killed the song, because we played it every other week for like a decade. So I put it on the shelf, but Stephen brought it back out. I think it was totally appropriate, especially for today's message, because there's actually a cool hinge point in Hebrews 11 that has that twist, where there's the land that's plentiful, and then there's this land where it's the wilderness and the desert, and I walk there. Sometimes God gives, and sometimes God takes away. But my heart will choose to say, blessed be your name. We've been in a Hebrew series. This is going to be week 19. So it seems like a long time ago when I introduced this series. Hebrews is written to an audience of first century Jews. We're not quite sure where they were. Maybe it was Jerusalem. Maybe it was somewhere else. But the big idea in Hebrews is that these Jews were used to the Levitical system. They were used to the temple, the tabernacle. They were used to having to do all these ceremonial things and adhere to all these different laws in order to be acceptable enough to God, to have security with God, to be close to God, to have fellowship with God. That's what they were used to. But they had seen the good news of Jesus Christ when Jesus came. He died on the cross, and he did away with that system, and he brought them into a new system. A new covenant is what the Bible refers to it as. And it was one of freedom. It was one where you didn't have to pay attention to all those ceremonial laws and everything else, but you trusted in the saving work of Jesus on the cross and his blood being shed there. And it changed how they operated. And so these first century Jews were actually in a place, as this book is being written, where they're encountering potential life-threatening situations where people are persecuting them for this newfound belief. And they're tempted to go back to the old system because maybe it was safer. Maybe they're looking ahead at life and they're going, there's just a wasteland of death in front of us because we're going to get persecuted. And so the author of Hebrews is writing to them, and the whole book so far has been him pleading with them, communicating one main point, and that is Jesus is better. He's better than the law. He's better than the old system. And he goes through their own history and proves from their scriptures, the Old Testament, that Jesus was foretold all the way through, that there was a story that started at the very beginning that God started to tell. And we catch glimpses of Jesus over and over and over again, and he was telling them all throughout this history, something better is going to come. And now the writer of Hebrews, he's proving that to them. He says, Jesus is better. He talks about all kinds of different things, but mainly it's a journey. It's a journey that all of us are on, from a wasteland, a desert place, into something that is just completely pleasurable and amazing. And there's a reference to a city, a place we're anticipating heaven. And he's writing saying, fix your eyes on Jesus, because there's going to be storms in this life and you need an anchor. You're going to be in a desert and you need water. He says, you focus your attention on Jesus Christ, and that is your fuel for getting through. And so now we're in Hebrews 11, and last week Aaron kicked us off defining basically what is faith. I'll talk about that in just a minute and kind of put his slide up about what he was talking about there. But I wanted to mention this, that I think we're actually in a season where we're evaluating this thing called faith. We took a break from our Hebrews series, and we did 3 weeks here as the year kicked off on prayer. John Larson and Jay Yowsling led us through that. We've been talking about that. It's been in our vocabulary. We've been talking about it on our small groups and in our meetings and in our homes. And one of the big ideas there is that there's a man who came to Jesus. He asked for something, and Jesus basically said, hey, where's your faith? And the guy goes, I believe, but help my unbelief. And we want to approach God this year from a position of belief, but also understanding we're not very good at prayer. We're not very good at faith. We're not even very good at belief, just like these Israelites. And we all need this encouragement. Have faith. Faith amounts to belief in a lot of different ways. And so that's our exhortation. Today again, let's believe. And on Friday nights, I don't know if you've been following our Friday night sermon series. We're 3 weeks into that. Stephen mentioned that. Friday night services for anybody who wants to come, all ages, all demographics. The one sort of difference between Fridays and Sundays is Fridays is a little bit louder sometimes. The band gets a little louder, which I kind of like. There's no child care, but we do serve a meal at 6 p.m., and it's really, really fun. But we've been talking there about these little tiny steps of faith. First of all, that Jesus called his disciples into, and then for us to evaluate in our lives, what is God calling us into in terms of taking steps of faith? As we walk through the wilderness of this life, there are paths in front of us, and we come to forks in those paths, and one path is the one that God wants, and the other path is one he doesn't want. And one's going to take a step of faith because maybe as we look down that path, we can't really see. And it reminds me of this poem. Oh, this, I did want to point this out. Today's a palindrome. 0202-2020, read it backwards, it's a palindrome. This hasn't happened in over 900 years. I just thought it was significant. God's going to do something wacky today? I don't know. Anyway, there's this poem, Robert Frost. He says, I shall be telling this with a sigh. This is the last stanza of his poem. There's two stanzas before this. And I always thought of this poem as like this happy sort of like, I took the road less traveled by. He says, I shall be telling this with a sigh. Somewhere ages and ages hence, two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference. And you think, oh man, I took the one less traveled by, and it was this cool thing, and I just achieved all these things, and it was just awesome. But he's telling this with a sigh, and when I was younger, I was like, oh, this means the whole world is open to me in possibilities, right? And the older I get, I start thinking, oh man, actually what he's talking about, maybe this is this midlife sort of existential thing where I realize when I was 20, if I had set out to become a surgeon, I probably could have. I probably had the time, I probably had the bandwidth for it, I probably had the energy for it, the resources maybe. Now that I'm 40, that door's probably closed for me because I've chosen a path and I can't go back to that moment where that fork in the road was. And so I say this with a sigh that some of my opportunities are done. And I think that's more of what he's saying. You come to midlife and you start evaluating, where have you been? This week, it was kind of funny. People like to text me funny things sometimes. And for the last couple weeks, I've been getting these random pictures from Christian Fitzgerald. And this was one he sent me. I couldn't even remember when this was. So this is me. And I remember this necklace is the only thing that gives me a clue because I lost that when I was skiing like 20 years ago. So this is a long time ago. Christian told me this is in his parents' basement, actually. And I started off, I came to Fort Collins, and I came to college, and this is probably my second year of college, maybe something like that. And I was hanging out with people like Christian Fitzgerald, and we were just kind of goofy kids, and people like Travis Neidert, who's sitting over there, and we were kind of stepping into this church thing. And there were paths in front of us. I had a lot of thoughts on what my career was going to be, had a lot of opportunities in front of me, had a lot of network opportunities. My family's fairly connected with a lot of different things. And I had four or five things. I was like, this is my career direction. And then I got caught up in this church thing. And I caught a vision for how church intersected with my life. And ultimately, how God's plan maybe wasn't the same plan that I had. So I jumped into it leading a small group, and we did fun photo scavenger hunt activities, and this is Vanessa. She actually married Christian a little bit later. So that's Vanessa Fitzgerald. This is my friend Mark, and I'm in a shopping cart here, and I'm not really sure why, but it was a photo scavenger hunt, so we did kind of silly things. And we did this together. We stepped out in faith and we did all kinds of ridiculous stuff. A little bit later down the road, I had decided, man, this is my group of people. These are my buddies. I'm going to be with these guys for life. But it was sort of a shallow understanding. Eventually, you know, I met these people and this beautiful thing right here. This is my wife, Sarah. Amazing hair. This is me right here. This is right before the whole baggy clothes thing like went completely out of fashion, which I've seen high schoolers wearing the same stuff now. Does this mean I'm old? I've come full circle? That's really strange. I don't know what the deal is with that. But here's my father-in-law, John. He's sitting right back there. And my mother-in-law, Carrie, she's here. And some of our other friends. And we're sitting at Walrus Ice Cream. So I married this girl. And together we set out. And she had plans too. She was going to be an engineer. And she was going to have money. And she was probably going to live in a nice flat in New York. And I came along and sort of ruined that dream. Because I had caught the vision for church. And if you work for a church, you don't usually make money. At least not very much of it. And so we set out. And this is us back then. We got married. And I got the vision that God wanted me to give my life to this congregation. And he made it pretty clear to me. And I had people in my life, I had family members telling me that's kind of irresponsible. You realize that people who work for churches don't make a lot of money. You're going to cripple your future. I had advisors that told me the same thing. I had career opportunities open up that I purposely closed the door on. And then when the time came for me to sit down with the pastors of the church and try to figure out how I was going to pay for life, I'd gotten married, and we realized the church didn't have money to pay me with. I was like, God is leading me here. What am I going to do? And so there was this program at the time where you could go and raise support. And so I jumped into the training program. And my wife and I, she just followed right along with me. And, you know, we had some really strong conversations sometimes in the middle of the night when we're losing sleep because we didn't have any money. And I literally had to call everybody I knew and raise support, which means I just call them and say, hey, can I come over and talk to you a little bit about what we're doing as a church, as some of you, and what I want to do with the church and what I believe vision is for the future. And I'm stepping out in faith, trusting that maybe some people that I know are going to provide a regular monthly donation to pay for my salary in order that I can pay rent and have food. And I remember one specific moment where Sarah and I were sitting down in our apartment, and you know, we had just gotten married, and we were still paying for her old apartment's rent because we couldn't find a sublease person. And rent had just gone up a little bit for us, and we were going to be $200 short, and not knowing what to do. But looking at the future and going, you know what? This is the path that God has for us. And by faith, even though it doesn't make any sense for us, this is where we're going to go. Because I believe God is behind it. And I trust that somehow God's going to pull through. So that's us. This is us. And I remember wrapping duct tape around my shoe because there's a hole in it and I couldn't afford to buy new shoes, and stepping out and going, you know what, God, you're going to take care of us. I'm not sure where our next paycheck is going to come from. So we're going to be in Hebrews 11 today. So why don't you pull your Bibles out and get there. Here's the thing about today. We've got a lot of verses to go through, and I've already talked a lot. But I want you to read your Bibles today. I'm not going to put all the verses up on the screen. I will put some verses up on the screen. But what we're going to do is we're going to go to Hebrews 11. We're going to start in verse 8. Maybe this will work. There we go. We're starting in verse 8. Get you there. And we're going to work our way all the way through to the end of the chapter. So let me pray first because we really need God's help here. God, we are here. I think every single one of us. We've taken at least one step of faith, simply getting up, getting in the car, and getting into this room. Every single one of us, for some reason or other, is here in this room by faith. Maybe it's a little bitty faith that's just starting to maybe think that the supernatural is something that is real, that maybe God exists, and it hasn't gone any further. God, I'm just grateful that that person is in this room. Maybe it's someone who's been following the Lord for the last 60, 70 years, nearing the end of life, nearing the phase where they get to see you face to face, and they've been walking with you the whole time. there's something there for them today in this text. And there's something for me. And Holy Spirit, we ask, since you're with us and you're in us and you're the one who can provide insight, that you would do that for us. You provide insight, you would kick us into action if we're not in action, and bolster our faith this morning. Speak through me. Pray all this in the name of Jesus who has saved us. Amen. All right, so let's, you all there? If you're confused about where Hebrews is, if you're new to this whole thing, it's on page 1007. We're going to stay there for just a second because we're going to start in verse 8, which is the bottom right of the page. So let's read. I'm not going to read the whole thing all at once. I'm going to kind of stop in the middle every once in a while and give some thoughts. So it's really important that we kind of read along together. Starting in verse 8, by faith Abraham obeyed when he was called out to go to a place that he was to receive as an inheritance. And he went out, not knowing where he was going. By faith he went to live in the land of promise, as in a foreign land, living in tents with Isaac and Jacob, heirs with him of the same promise. For he was looking forward to the city that has foundations, whose designer and builder is God. And so by faith, Abraham, we go all the way back into the book of Genesis, and you can read the story of Abraham. We've talked a little bit about Abraham because he's referenced throughout the book of Hebrews a little bit. But by faith, he stepped out and he didn't know where he was going. And this is one thing about faith. Faith is a thing where you're going to take a step and you're not quite sure what that step is going to be like. My kids and I went hiking the other day, and we got an icy part of the trail, and I was teaching them, you know, don't commit your weight to the step until you know how slippery that step's going to be, because it's going to go out from underneath you. And Abraham had to commit and take that step, and he didn't know for sure what was going to happen when he did, when he left to go to the promised land. But what he did know is that he had his eyes fixed on God, and he could trust God to guide those steps, and so he pressed forward. Let's go to the next verse here. By faith, Sarah herself, that's his wife, Sarah, she received power to conceive even when she was past the age, since she considered him faithful who had promised. Therefore, from one man, and him as good as dead, that's Abraham. You know someone's really old, right? When they're as good as dead, like you go visit Abraham and you come back and you tell your friends, like, he's as good as dead. Like, he's about to croak. Like, that's what the writer is trying to point out here. This guy's old, right? He's as good as dead. From one man and him as good as dead, and his wife, who's past childbearing age, from them were born descendants as many as the stars of heaven and as many as the innumerable grains of sand by the seashore. One thing I want to point out as we go through this is that this is the story that God is telling of Abraham and Sarah's life. And sometimes if you go back to the actual history of what really happened, so God shows up on the scene, he tells Abraham, who's old, as good as dead, you're going to father a child. And this is Abraham's actual response. You want to read the real story. Genesis 17, 17, his response. Then Abraham fell on his face and laughed. What kind of faith is that? Laughed and said to himself, shall a child be born to a man who is 100 years old? Shall Sarah, who's 90 years old, bear a child? And here's what Sarah said when the news was revealed to her. In the next chapter, Genesis 18, starting verse 11. Now Abraham and Sarah were old, advanced in years. The way of women had ceased to be with Sarah. The Bible's so formal. She'd gone through menopause, couldn't have babies anymore. All right. So, I mean, that's a pretty significant thing, right? I don't know if anybody that's reversed on really necessarily. So Sarah laughed to herself, saying, after I am worn out and my Lord is old, that's Abraham, her Lord, lowercase, shall I have pleasure? A lot of pleasure for a woman to have a child and have that. That's a big deal. And then here's the next, God comes in, he says, the Lord says to Abraham, why did Sarah laugh and say, shall I indeed bear a child now that I'm old? Is anything too hard for the Lord? At the appointed time, I'll return to you about this time next year, and Sarah shall have a son. But Sarah denied it, saying, I did not laugh. She did, right? So now she's lying about it. For she was afraid. He said, no, but you did laugh. He points it out, right? So here's the first thing I think about when I read Hebrews 11, is that God's view of history and his people
is different than my view of history and his people. That should be encouraging, I think, for our faith. Because I've had moments like this. You know, I stepped out in faith and did the hard task of raising support to come on staff here with this church, and that was one of the most difficult things I've ever done. You know, so I did that. But there's all kinds of other things in my life where I've been Sarah or I've been Abraham, fall down and laugh and go, I don't believe. My faith is this big sometimes. It's just tiny, right? But there's this amazing, amazing passage that the Apostle Paul writes to us. And I think there's a lens or a filter that God views his people through. And ultimately, it's through Jesus Christ. And so, in 2 Corinthians 5:21, Paul says this. He says, for our sake, he made him, that's Jesus, to be sin, who knew no sin, so that in him we might become the righteousness of God. And so, when God looks at his people, he sees his people through the lens of what Jesus has accomplished for them. And so your faith and your story might look like one of unbelief and failure, but if you've had faith that Jesus did what he did on the cross, if God's going to write something about you that would fit into Hebrews 11, it's going to read a little differently than what you think it maybe should. And that's true for people sitting around you. Kind of levels the playing field for our critique of one another and our failures and our successes. So, back to here, Hebrews 11, back to the text. So, it takes a little bit of a turn here. Verse 13 is really, really hard. These all died, referring to the people. And Aaron talked about some of these people last week. There was Abel, and there's Enoch, and there's Noah. And so now we have Abraham, we have Sarah, and it says, these died in faith, not having received the things promised, but having seen them and greeted them from afar, having acknowledged that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. For people who speak thus make it clear that they are seeking a homeland. If they had been thinking of that land from which they had gone out, they would have had opportunity to return. They're going to go back to that path where that road forked. If that was what they were thinking about, they'd have opportunity to do that. But that's not what they were thinking about. Verse 16, but as it is, they desire a better country, that is a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared for them a city. We're going to come back to that concept a little bit, but we've got a lot more to work through. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, he offered up Isaac, who had received the promises. He who had received the promises was in the act of offering up his only son. Just real quick there, have we seen that concept before, offering up his only son? I remember seeing something about that in John 3, where God offers up his only son. There's pictures just written all throughout the Bible that just display Jesus and put the cross on display and put God's action on display. And here's one of them, a picture from history in the Bible where someone's giving up his only son, right? His only son, of whom it was said, through Isaac shall your offspring be named. He considered that God was able, because God had made a promise that through Isaac all these people would come about. And God asked Abraham, now give up your son and sacrifice him. And so he's going, God promised, so somehow God's going to, even if I do that, raise him from the dead. And so Abraham steps out in faith, right? So through Isaac shall your offspring be named. So he considered that God was able to even to raise him from the dead, from which, figuratively speaking, he did receive him back. Any other person that we know of that was raised from the dead? Yeah, Jesus. We had this word some weeks ago as we were talking through another part of Hebrews with a guy named Melchizedek, and there's a word of a type, and so Isaac is a type, a picture that God drew in someone's real life to point to Jesus Christ in the death and resurrection of what Jesus did, and that's what that is. So then, moving on. By faith, Isaac invoked future blessings on Jacob and Esau. By faith, Jacob, when dying, blessed each of the sons of Joseph, bowing in worship over the head of his staff. I wish, and I've actually seen sermon series where pastors went through all of these people one at a time, week after week after week after week. We don't have time to do that, but each one of these stories is just an amazing story of someone trusting God. We can't go through them all. By faith, Jacob, when he was dying, blessed each of the sons of Joseph. I read that, bowing in worship over the head of his staff. By faith, verse 22, Joseph, at the end of his life, made mention of the exodus of the Israelites and gave directions concerning his bones. So that's 300 years before the Israelites exodus. Is that a word? exited the Exodus. It's like when we read the verse, never mind. 300 years before the Exodus, Joseph knew the promise that God had made to Abraham, that there was going to be this promised land in the land of Canaan, and Abraham had settled there, but they had come to Egypt because of this famine, and the whole family was there instead of in the promised land, and they couldn't get back at the time, but Joseph, he's like, there's going to be a point years from now when we go back because God promised, and I believe that's where we're ending up. And here's what he says. He says he made mention and he gave directions concerning his bones. So 300 years later, they dug him back up and they took him with them when they went back to the promised land. Because he foresaw God's promise is going to come true. And he believed and he had faith. So by faith, he did that. Then by faith, Moses, when he was born, was hidden for 3 months by his parents because they saw that the child was beautiful. They were not afraid of the king's edict. Remember, the king, the Pharaoh of Egypt at the time, was afraid because the Israelites were kind of starting to outnumber them in population. And so he decided to do this killing thing where he killed all their male children. And Moses was one of those guys, and so they hid him from the Pharaoh. Anyway, by faith, Moses, when he was grown up, he refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, if you guys know that story, choosing rather to be mistreated with the people of God than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. He considered the reproach of Christ greater wealth than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking to the reward. By faith, he left Egypt, not being afraid of the anger of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. Here's another lens God is looking at, because there's multiple times where Moses is afraid of the king. But ultimately, Moses had faith in God and still went through with what God asked him to do. God even was generous enough to modify it a little bit and let Moses' brother be his mouthpiece, because Moses complained and didn't have enough faith that he'd have the right words to say in the moment. You know, so there's just these little things, and God looks at it and goes, I love that guy's faith. Even though some of us look at it and we go, well, maybe it was faith, I guess, a little bit. So God's lens is just so encouraging to see it. So by faith, we're all the way down at verse 28. By faith, he kept the Passover. This is Moses still. He sprinkled the blood so that the destroyer of the firstborn might not touch them. This is in the middle of the plagues. And then by faith, they got out of Egypt. By faith, the people crossed the Red Sea as on dry land. Man, you see something like that, that really bolsters your faith, right? The sea parts. Then the Egyptians, when they attempted to do the same, they were drowned by faith. And this is a whole bunch of years later. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell down after they had been encircled for 7 days. That was with Joshua after Moses' death. By faith, Rahab, the prostitute, remember she was in Jericho, and the spies went into the land, and the spies went into Jericho, and they met this woman, and she is a harlot. She's a prostitute. She is a woman who is doing some bad stuff. She's probably being oppressed. I don't know what the whole pimp situation was back then, but men have been taking advantage of women for eons, and she's in that situation. And by faith, Rahab saw the reputation that God had, and if you go back and look at the story, you see Rahab telling the spies, I've heard of your God, and I've heard of what he's doing. And so by faith, verse 31, Rahab the prostitute did not perish with those, the rest of those in Jericho, who were disobedient because she had been given a friendly welcome to the spies. One reason why I know God absolutely is on the side of women, especially women who have been oppressed, is because Rahab the prostitute is in the bloodline of Jesus Christ. He's one of her descendants. She married into the family. And he's got her blood running through his veins. Back in the day when your heredity was everything, and you wouldn't be caught dead claiming someone like that in your bloodline, that would be a disqualifier for you. And Jesus was proud to name Rahab. I just love it. And what more shall I say? Verse 32, for time would fail me to tell. This is where we're at again. Time would fail me to tell of Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, of David, and of Samuel, and the prophets who through faith conquered kingdoms, enforced justice, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the power of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, were made strong out of weakness, became mighty in war, put foreign armies to flight, and women received back their dead by resurrection. Wow! That's some faith to accomplish those things. That's amazing. But then, the text takes a turn. Right in the middle here, in verse 35, women receive back their dead by resurrection. You know where those stories are? There's actually two of them. One is Elijah. It's in Kings, is it 1 Kings? I think it's 1 Kings 17. And Elijah, he heals the dead son of this widow. And then later, Elijah's successor, the next prophet in line, is Elisha. And in 2 Kings 4, he raises the child of the Shunammite woman, and he raised her from the dead. I bet that's what they're referring to. And those guys, Elijah and Elisha, their faith was amazing and brought this huge victory. But then the text turns, and by faith, we run into sorrow. And we run into hardship, and here's that next verse of blessed be your name. We've been in the land of prosperity, the land of victory, the land of plenty. And suddenly we're in the land of the wilderness walking. You give and you take away. Midway through. Some were tortured, refusing to accept release so that they might rise again to a better life. I don't know exactly what story this is referring to, but the big idea there is that they're being tortured and they're basically being told to recant, to say that they don't believe in God, and they refuse to do that because there's something better on the other side of death that they believe. Others, verse 36, suffered mocking and flogging, chains and imprisonment. They were stoned. They were sawn in two. They were killed with the sword. They went about in skins of sheep and goats, destitute, afflicted, mistreated. I love verse 38, of whom the world was not worthy. These people, the world had already said, hey, we're going to torture you. We're going to kill you. You're not worthy to be here. We're going to get rid of you. And in the text, it turns and says, no, no, no. It's the world that wasn't worthy of them. These are pillars of the faith. Though it feels like they weren't victorious. They wandered about in deserts and mountains and in dens and caves of the earth. And all these, verse 39, though commended through their faith, did not receive what was promised, since God had provided something better for us, that apart from us, they should not be made perfect. I think what I want to do, I want to point out three things that I think faith does. Last week, Aaron pointed out five things that faith is. And then I think the text kind of takes a turn because it starts talking about all these different people that did things by faith. And so we defined faith last week. This week, we're going to talk about what is the result of that faith. What does that faith then do? And I think there's three clear things here. And here's the first one. Faith hopes. There's a narrative through here where every single one of these guys, they're anticipating something. They're anticipating something in the future. They're anticipating something that's different than their current reality, whether it's leaving a place and going to a promised land, whether it's, hey, we're gonna cross this desert and we're going to get into this promised land, or we're going to go take this city, or whatever it is, they're anticipating something better, and it's founded in hope in God's faithfulness, that God promised something and he's going to come through. It hopes. It hopes for a better land. You know, they didn't receive what was promised since God had provided something better for us. It hopes for something better. That God's going to do that. He's going to do it. He's going to do it. And one thing that's interesting about this, and we as pastors are always pleading with you guys to read your Bibles, because Faith doesn't hope in a vacuum. Aaron mentioned last week that faith isn't blind. The world thinks, oh, I just grab onto my faith and I believe hard enough and things will happen. And the reality with Christianity is an intellectual faith. Paul said this in the book of Romans. He said this in Romans 10:17, and Aaron mentioned this last week. I mentioned it 2 weeks ago in our Friday service. Faith comes from hearing. You take your steps of faith because you've heard something. Hearing through the word of Christ. Hearing through reading and understanding the narrative and understanding what God has communicated to his people. Faith hopes because of understanding, because we've heard the truth. It's not absent from the truth. Read your Bible. You're going to have more hope if you do. Otherwise, it's hope in a vacuum. Second thing, faith takes action. There's a verse here that's probably the most visible in that, where it says, what more shall I say? This is verse 32. For time will fail to tell of Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, of David and Samuel and the prophets who through faith, and here's where they took action, they did something, faith does something, faith moves, who through faith conquered kingdoms, enforced justice, obtained promises, stopped the mouth of the lions, quenched the power of fire. It takes action. It doesn't go, well, you know, I think because I have hope in God, God's going to just take care of this so I can sit back on the couch and not do anything. All those people took strong, risky steps of faith. They had hope in something, and they understood that they needed to move to do it. And sometimes we get a little confused by this because we start thinking, well, you know what? If I'm supposed to have faith, and we've been harping on this in Hebrews, I'm not supposed to be attached to all the works, all the do stuff, all the laws, all the stuff that I'm supposed to accomplish, right? And actually, you can go to other books of the Bible and read things like that. So in the book of James, James, the apostle, the guy who followed Jesus, the guy who's the brother of Jesus, he says this. He says, you know what? What good is it, my brothers, if someone says he has faith but does not have works? Can that faith save him? We get confused sometimes because now we're starting to think there's this like this little legalist in me that reads something like this and goes, oh, you mean I am saved by my works? And it just wants to like rise up in me. And it's like this little guy right here inside me, right? He's inside me. And he's going, give me the list. Right? I need the check boxes. Because if I have a list, I can be saved if I have this list. I can get to work checking these things off. And I read this and I think about faith doing things and I start, no, it's backwards. And James explains it like this. He says, if a brother or sister is poorly clothed and lacking in daily food, and one of you says to them, go in peace, be warmed and filled without giving them the things needed for the body, what good is that? And so you can believe and have hope, but if you don't take action on the things that you've come to understand and believe, do you really truly believe it? That's what we were talking about in our prayer series over the last month. Maybe we don't pray not because we lack discipline, but maybe we don't take the action, do the work of praying. Maybe it's because we don't believe. Right? True belief, true faith should produce action. It should produce movement. It's not the movement that saves you, it's the faith. It's the movement that reveals that the faith is real faith. It reveals it. It's like it's a symptom that is on the surface of a person when they have faith in God. And I think this is pretty revealing because you wouldn't walk up to a person and just say, all right, go in peace, be warm and well fed, and not meet their need. What kind of action is that? It's a pretty crazy person. So faith by itself, if it does not have works, if it isn't taking action, if it's not doing something, it's dead. Genuine faith moves us to action. Don't get it the other way around, because the minute you start doing works to somehow achieve, get in good graces with God, you're getting it backwards. That does not produce faith. That produces death. We already established that. It produces adherence to the law. None of us can do that. So, it takes action. And I just think about all these guys who did these amazing things. They conquered kingdoms and enforced justice, obtained promises, and you know, and it's David and it's Gideon, and it's like, think about Gideon, for instance. Gideon has 32,000 guys, and there's enough Midianites that are oppressing them that 32,000 guys aren't enough. And they're all in hiding, and they're all afraid, and God comes to Gideon, and he goes, I'm going to send you up against them. I mean, the Midianites are so many that I think it's in Judges 7, it actually says that they couldn't count their camels. They had too many camels to even count. They were as many as the locusts. And Gideon had 32,000 guys. And God says, you know what? You have too many men. And Gideon's like, we don't have enough men. And God's like, well, I'm gonna whittle them down. And I'm just going to take the ones who have faith. And will you have faith? And will you trust me that we can take those guys? And he whittles Gideon's army down through a variety of exercises. You can go back and read it in Judges. To 300 guys. And God goes out in front of them and just does the battle for them. 300 guys in faith go to battle and they completely defeat the Midianites. It's amazing. And the only thing that makes any sense in the midst of that is the supernatural. And God proved it. And Gideon stepped out in faith and he went, all right, I'm going to do it. And again, God's lens, Gideon goes through all this doubt and all these tests where he's testing God to see if he's really there and really trying. And 300 guys, and Gideon steps out of faith. He took action. He took action. I think about taking action. Like, think about the story of Jericho. Sometimes when you take a step of faith, like economically for me, when I'm stepping out in faith, going, I'm going to raise support, I don't know if anybody believes in me enough to actually give me money every month. And it's kind of embarrassing to ask all my friends for that. I'm going to step out in faith that this is what God wants for my life. It seems absurd sometimes. So think about the story of Jericho. Think about Joshua. So Moses has died. They've come through the wilderness. There's all these new guys, and Joshua's there, and they've crossed the Jordan. And Joshua is the new guy. He goes before God. He's like, God, what do we do? How do we take Jericho? And God's like, do you have a marching band? He doesn't talk to him about swords and spears and battle strategy like that. He's like, take the marching band. Right? Josh is like, those are like the nerds. Those are like the, I don't know. Sorry, I'm a musician. I can talk about bands. I was never in a marching band. Though. Do you have a flautist? I don't know. I think about guys who play trumpet and stuff like that. Like, he's like, you have a band. What you're going to do is you're going to go to the city with your band. Forget all the swords and stuff. March around the city and then go back to camp. We'll do that day after day. See what happens. And so Joshua, the new guy, he's like, all right, well, guys, Moses is dead. I'm the new guy. We got to go take this city, so I need the band. Bring the trumpet players out here. Everybody's like, what in the world? It's absurd. It just seems completely absurd. We know the story. They go out and they march and they go back to camp and they come out the next day and they march around and they go back to camp and seven times and then the last day they march around seven times and then they blow the trumpets and they yell and the walls fall down and they conquer and God does just a crazy thing that doesn't make any sense and they took that step of faith and they're like, where am I going to go? I don't know what's going to happen when my foot comes down, but they did it. Faith takes action. They did not sit on their rear ends on the couch, just sit waiting around. So faith moves. It's not static. It doesn't just stop there. It does stuff. All right. Next one. And I think this one is really, really important for us to understand. Faith perseveres. And we took that turn in the middle of verse 35 into verse 36 where others are sawn in two. I mean, just sawn in two. And actually, I went through over the last couple weeks, I was trying to figure out which story each one was referring to, and the one I couldn't find in the Old Testament was sawn in two, but I did online find a commentator who said that tradition has it that the prophet Isaiah, at the end of his life, he came to his end that way, that he prophesied and followed God, and the very end of his life, he was sawn in two by the king. So it's not in the Bible, take that for what it's worth, but that's a possibility for that one. But faith hopes, it anticipates that God's promises are going to come true. Faith moves, it takes action. Faith works, it does stuff. And then the third one, faith perseveres. So back to verse 13, I said we come back to this. It says, these all died in faith, not having received the things promised, but having seen them and greeted them from afar, having acknowledged they were strangers and exiles on the earth. And you think about this, and you think about the reality that Abraham is promised a city, but he dies in this little camp that he's made with a tent and not a city. Right? God promised him a city, and he dies in a tent. Verse 36, others suffered mocking and flogging, even chains and imprisonment. They were stoned, they were sawn in two, they were killed with the sword. Life in this world is really, really hard. And you've probably heard of a thing called the prosperity gospel. And that's people who read the first part of Hebrews 11, and they stop reading midway through verse 35 and don't read through the end. Because I think all of us, maybe all of us have a little bit of this in us, where we think, if I have faith, God's going to do something. And so we read the story, for instance, in the New Testament of the Apostle Peter, when he gets thrown in jail, right? And the church prays for him, and an angel shows up and releases him from jail. Remember that story? And you think, all right, here's my application from that. If I have enough faith, and I believe hard enough, I'm going to get released from prison, or whatever else is going to happen. You know, I had this sickness, and then there's this surgeon who comes along, and he's like, hey, your cancer's gone. It's a miracle. You prayed hard enough. You had enough faith. And sometimes that happens. We have evidence of it here. Sometimes the walls of Jericho fall down. But other times people are sawn in two. And you don't look at the prophet Isaiah or these other people who are referenced and say, they must not have had enough faith. And so that whole idea that you can have enough faith that God's going to give you your health and wealth and everything else, that's not what they're saying here, right? That's false. It could happen. Sometimes God delivers, but sometimes it seems like he doesn't. Just let that sink in for a minute. I think for me, as I look at it, here in prosperity land, Fort Collins, where I'm a homeowner, I'm relatively healthy, I have three healthy kids who are generally happy. You know, I've experienced some financial hardship over the years that's kind of settled out. I need to read this for myself. And I think we all really need to read this for ourselves because we live incredibly safe lives. The idea of stepping out and risking to the degree that you're going to lose your life for the sake of following God is not something that most of us have had to ever encounter, and probably won't. Maybe we will. But these stories, they did. And yet, many of us shrink back when presented with the risky choice of following God or following something else that's going to guarantee a better result on this side of heaven. And we don't step out in faith because we're afraid. And it's instructive to us that others were willing to go into chains and imprisonment, stoned, sawn in two, killed with the sword, go about in skins of sheep and goats, destitute, afflicted, mistreated. And I feel mistreated when I don't have a steak every so often. Oh, how fickle I can be. I get scared sometimes when I look at the political situation. I get frightened sometimes. I look at the whole thing and I want to go up in arms and I want to seize what should rightfully be mine. But maybe that's not faith. And maybe God's calling us into something different. All of these people are looking for something. You know, I think about those who receive back their dead, and you can think about those stories, or like the story of Lazarus in John 11, and you think about some of those things, and just the reality that yes, they came back from the dead, and yes, that's an amazing accomplishment, but all of those people then had to live a life where there was suffering, and there was pain, and there was hardship, and then they had to die again. So it's like, on one hand, that's a great success, an amazing thing, You know, you see Peter in prison getting released. Well, you also see John the Baptist in prison not getting released and getting beheaded. That happened. Didn't mean he had less faith. It just means that God's got a better plan. And ultimately, that better plan is heaven. That better plan is heaven. You know, think about the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Do you remember them? Remember them? So there's the friends of Daniel in the book of Daniel, and they've been taken captivity into Babylon, and Nebuchadnezzar's there, and you know, they're supposed to bow down in front of this idol, and they go, "We're not gonna do it, even though he's decreed. If you stand up, if you don't bow down, we're gonna throw you into that fiery furnace." And they stoke up the fire and they go, "We're gonna throw you guys in there unless you bow down in front of this idol." And they're like, "We will not deny God." But do you remember what they said? You remember what they said? They said, "We believe our God will deliver us from suffering. But if he doesn't, it doesn't matter." Because their agenda was not to be delivered from suffering or even death. Their agenda was to be with God. And they understood on the other side of death, there was something that was going to last for all of eternity. And their decision to follow God was going to make a huge difference for that. And that momentary suffering of being in the fiery furnace, it didn't amount to a hill of beans. It's a little tiny blip compared to the eternal weight of glory that was to be revealed when they finally see God face to face. And that's what they believed. And so they told that king, whether he saves us or not, we're not going to deny him. You give and take away, my heart will choose to say, blessed be your name. Why? Because I have hope for something better that's coming. God provided something better. Verse 40, for us that apart from us they should not be made perfect. That is just a crazy verse to me. Something better, I think ultimately the whole theme of Hebrews is something better is Jesus Christ. God provided something better for us to fix our eyes on. It's Jesus Christ. It's the gospel. It's the work he did on the cross where he defeated death. He raised from the dead. And now he's seated at the right hand of God. And he's advocating for us. And he's inviting us into that. We get to raise from the dead into eternal life with him. And we've caught glimpses of that. We get to see that. They didn't get to even see that yet. But now we get to see that. The author of Hebrews is telling these first century Jews, you've seen Jesus now. You even have something to bolster your faith that these guys didn't have yet. Right? But they have existed all this time. Now for this moment to bring us to this moment where Jesus has done his thing and now we get to be the church. And apart from us and that in God's plan, remember I mentioned at the very beginning, God's got a plan from start to finish and his plan up to this point with every single one of these people, generation after generation after generation, is to culminate in Jesus on the cross and everything that happens with the church after that, generation after generation. And this, he's saying to these first century Hebrews, now it's us. Now it's our turn. They should not be made perfect apart from us, meaning that the end goal of their faith is now being revealed in what's transpiring now. And at the very end of time, when Jesus comes back, I think this is also referring to the second coming, Jesus comes back and we're all joined together with Noah and Abraham and Joshua and us. There's going to be this moment where each one of us gets to tell a little bit of that story. And Noah's going to go, you know what? It was completely absurd. But I hoped in God's faithfulness and I trusted. And so when God told me to build a boat 500 miles from the nearest ocean, I went ahead and took action on it and I did it. And I persevered through that even though there was years of my neighbors mocking me, even though the boat was 1,000 times too big for what my family needed, and I wasn't quite sure what was coming, but when the rain came, it proved God. And then Abraham's going to talk about his thing. By faith, Abraham, and Sarah's going to speak up. By faith. Look what God did. He made a child. And Joshua's going to be like, man, by faith we did the absurd. Can you believe what we did? Instead of marching band, instead of the army? That's ridiculous. By faith, look what God did. And I'm going to get to stand up there. I hope, I think, eternity should allow for all of us. And this isn't in the Bible or anything like that, but I'm anticipating, you know, we all get written into this, right? Because, and I can't go too far into it, but the next chapter, there shouldn't be a chapter division here because you can't read chapter 12 without reading chapter 11. Therefore, this is verse 1 of chapter 12. Therefore what? Therefore chapter 11. Therefore, since we're surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, all these people in their faith, we're surrounded by these people, let us also. And so I'm going to stand up there and I'm going to be like, you know what? By faith, Sarah and I were $200 short in our budget. And so by faith, instead of quitting and going to get a different career, because we were certain, dead certain, God's called us here to this family, to this occupation. By faith, we sat down in our apartment living room. And the two of us, we prayed together. And we asked God for that $200. And this story is part of the first part where people get stuff. Because that evening, my old roommate JJ knocked on the door. We hadn't said anything to anybody about this. And we opened the door and he goes, I was just driving home from work, which is on the other side of town, going the other direction. He's like, I just had this weird feeling that I was supposed to turn around and come over here and write you a check for $200. I don't know what that's all about, but here you go. And we closed the door and we went, God's real. And he just verified what I'm supposed to do with my life, at least at this particular point. And so when I look back on the roads diverging in my life and I look back on the different opportunities that I've had, I do not regret the path that I took. And I just wonder for all of us, what is God calling us into for faith? What's it going to read for you? By faith, Adlai did what? I don't know. By faith, Joey. Actually, I just go down the line, Porter, Jordan, Caleb. Oh, sorry. I always pick on this front row. The writer of Hebrews turns here and he says, it's our turn. You and I are here because of the blood, sweat, tears, lives of the generations who have gone before us. It's our turn. This is my 40-year block on this earth in the grand scheme of God's plan to take what was given to me generation after generation, handed to me. Now it's my turn to take that baton for the duration of my life in faith that God has this baton going to somebody else in the future for some glorious, amazing thing that won't be revealed until the very end of time when Jesus comes back. And by faith, I'm going to do that with my life. What are you guys going to do? High school students, CSU students, I was there 20 years ago, 25 years ago. What are you going to do with your life? Don't run off and do something else. It's not worth it. We're written into this. God's going to do something amazing. Band, you guys can come on back up because we're over time. This is what happens when you give me the longest chapter. We're going to sing a song called Taste of Eternity. And sometimes I have a hard time singing this song if I haven't really stopped to think about God's promises. If I haven't really stopped to think about it, and I'm wallowing a little bit maybe in life's hardship, and I think the taste of eternity is here on our lips. What does this even mean for me? Well, what it means is that there's a future country, a future hope, a future deliverance. There's a future eternity of amazing glory that will be for all time revealed in every single thing that we're doing right now that God is doing through us. And so when we sing A Taste of Eternity is Here on Our Lips, every single one of us can look at those promises and anticipate and hope in the future. And we can hope enough to take action and persevere through to the end because God's got amazing things coming. So will you guys just bear with us and let's go 5 more minutes and sing this song. And then I know everybody's really antsy to get to the Super Bowl party, right? Right? Everybody's like, yeah, we've got some clapping going on here. That's okay. That's cool. But let's get a little excited about what God's able to do and sing Taste of Eternity.